Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What I win?
Live from the Papa John studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Tuesday is upon us. Football season is down to 3 games. 2 on Sunday, 1-2 weeks from Sunday, and then it's over. So Pete Carroll going for 2 screwed me on Sunday. Clemson's defense, 3 boneheaded plays screwed me last night. So all the hopes and dreams of a gambler came crashing down around me. But what the hell? In early October, I threw $50 into my account. I still have $225 left, which I will now plan on building up and blowing on the Super Bowl. I think I'm on San Francisco to win the whole thing. Am I ever going to learn to stay away from the NFC West? We shall see. Making the rounds today, Antonio Gates officially retires. I got to be honest. I don't have a lot of memories of him in recent years. It's like he didn't play last year. I mean, this past year. He started a game the year before with a career-low 28 catches. When you retire from something you're not playing, is that technically a retirement?
Now you've gone.
It's the Rodney Dangerfield deal when he had a first go at show business, and it didn't go well. And his running joke was, to show you how well I was doing, when I retired the first time from show business, I was the only one who knew I retired. Went a little bit better the second time around. So Antonio Gates retires. Top 5 tight ends of all time. Yeah. Gonzalez, Witten. Who? Is Gronk up there? Did he qualify?
He's extremely dominant. I think that was the thing when everybody was saying when he retired, assuming he doesn't come back after his year away, is the way he was used in games where he was bigger, faster, stronger than anybody that could cover him, way bigger than linebackers, or way bigger than corners, way faster than linebackers. He was a mismatch nightmare, dominant in the red zone, but he just abused his body running over the middle, and he was literally broken down and he couldn't play anymore. And if, you know, they run 20 less, 5 yards in or 5 yard ins for him that he's catching, running into somebody or jumping and doing a flip here and there or whatever, maybe one less weekend, partying from sunup to sundown, maybe he plays a couple extra seasons and then solidifies himself there. I think he's at the top, towards the top of the list.
Retires at 29. Played a lot of freaking playoff games, I'll tell you that much. AP, 4-time first team All-Pro. Of course, the problem was, while, at times, you could say, was there a better tight end in the league? Well, probably not, but you can't play 6 games, and then 6 games, and then 10 and then 11. So,
just throwing a name out.
No, that's legit. And he's actually probably as intriguing as anybody else because of the 52 different X factors that go into it. A guy who just turned 30 the day after my birthday. There isn't a birthday party for me here. I'll tell you what.
Tannenism.
You have this conversation 4 more healthy years even. And Travis Kelce. Dude is on his way. And he was a third round pick. I mean, he played in the Conference USA then, American Athletic now, at Cincinnati. And he was one of those guys. I'm not sure why. He started his career late. He was a 24-year-old rookie. I don't know, did he play 5 years in college? But aside from really his rookie year when he really wasn't on the field, I mean, he's now had 6 years where he's bottomed out at 67 catches. I mean, he's gone the last 4 years for tight end is nuts. 85 for 1,100, 83 for 1,000, 103 for 1,300 last year, and 97 for 1,200 this year. I mean, those are receiver numbers. Those are Gonzalez numbers.
Yeah, I think he's the first tight end to have 4 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. So, yeah, he's working his way up the list. I mean, he'd had a 3-touchdown quarter last week in the playoffs. Like, he's a dominant force, and he's got a little personality too. Like, he's not afraid to show
him
off the swag. He has a little fun. He doesn't take everything too seriously, which is really nice. I think Tony G is the number one. Gates Witten probably a close 2-3 of, and those are even just like kind of more modern guys. I can't really think of any older tight ends that were like, you know, this was the tight end or anything. I think the entire position has completely changed. Like, there's different guys. There aren't, you know, universal guys who can block, you know, really well and receive really well. Or, you know, you've got just straight up blocking tight ends. And then you've got receiving tight ends that are just having the ability to have a fourth or fifth receiver out on the field if you need them.
Yeah. He's got to be like first team all pro Jones at this point. Go ahead. I got it. I'll be with you any moment. There you go. 16, 17, 18, 19. First team, all pro. So there you go. Another guy who would maybe be a tad dismissive of, because he left was the, by the way, has there ever been a greater player, worse broadcaster than Jason Witten? Because him coming back this year, and by the way, missing the playoffs, a lot of people thought that would be like an extra weapon. But at age 37, he's really become a minimal threat. I mean, he's 8 yards a catch now.
Well, yeah, I think he still run. I mean, he, even before he had the year off in the Monday night booth, he was running really slow. I mean, that's what, you know, like 15 years of playing football will do to you. But he was always kind of, he's in his stance. He runs his 3-yard button hook. He catches the ball. He falls forward for an extra 3 or 4 yards and boom, there you go. And then in the red zone, he'll be able to jump up and make a catch or whatever. But yeah, he wasn't like I don't think he did himself any good other than kind of padding his stats a little bit to just kind of reaffirm and confirm that, you know, he is one of the best tight ends to ever play. But he was that before he entered the Monday night booth. So, like, yeah, he didn't really need to do that, but he did it anyways. Well, he's fine this year.
By the way, anybody in the middle of the national championship game see Lillard's half-court shot? Splash! Charlotte's not good. But Oregon did beat them at home. Just shot the lights out. Made 16 three-pointers. Lillard and McCollum, 57 points between them. Almost an even split, 30 and 27. And, by the way, we've got a national champion. And The conversation about greatest team, hey, that's a thankless topic. Undefeated during the BCS era, telling. Undefeated during the college football playoff era, even more telling. First team ever to beat in one season the top four in the AP Associated Press poll. Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, and Oklahoma. Best single performance by a player for a season in the history of college football. For somebody who really knows the history and has watched the game for a long time, as weird as this sounds, I'm not really sure there's a debate here. And, you know me, I'll throw generations up and say, you know, less games and what was on the line. But if you're going to bring something to this debate, what's bigger than the trifecta? The best numbers ever for a quarterback, the Heisman and the title, and you're the best player in the playoffs. He threw 12 touchdown passes in their two playoff games. I think he had four against Georgia with a running TD. I mean, in the three biggest games of the year, he had a season. You know, I always looked at Sanders, Barry Sanders, when he won the Heisman in 88. He set the record that year. He ran for more than 2,700 yards. And, you know, back then they played 11 games plus a bowl, so he played 12. Oh, I don't think they counted bowl games back then for your season total.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So it probably shows up as 26 and change. And, you know, Oklahoma State had a very good team, especially for them at the time. They went 10-2, but they were never in the title picture because they were third in the conference. They got worked by Nebraska, gave up 63 points, and got beat by Oklahoma during the Switzer era. I mean, you know, with Colt Brennan, whose record of 58 TD passes in a year got snapped last night by Joe Burrow, you know, played at Hawaii, not even in the Mountain West, in the old WAC. They had a big season in, want to feel like time flies, 2008. They went unbeaten, and then Georgia, who had a quarterback by the name of Matthew Stafford, with Knowshon Moreno, kicked their ass in the Sugar Bowl 41-10. So if you incorporate numbers, the fact that Burrow did not, like, his worst game would have graded out a minus. And like I said, knocking off Alabama and Georgia and Clemson and Oklahoma this year, I really don't think it's a question. So somebody, I'm sure, will be willing to play devil's advocate and throw a name out there. But like I'm saying, you better have some kind of fantastic resume to match what Nine did last night. I mean, good God, it's historic numbers. Oh, another thing from last night.
He threw like 13 touchdowns last year.
Yeah, what the hell happened since 2018? I mean, is it strictly Joe Brady? Is it the...
Maybe
the good receivers. Jeez, those guys go get every ball. Like, but their frigging lives depended on it.
But it's not like they've got a team loaded up with, like, you know, redshirt freshmen or whatever that are lining up at sophomores. Like, I don't remember I don't think the narrative around LSU was like they've got a bunch of roster turnover to kind of deal with now. You know, what's going to change with all of these new guys? And, oh, look what just happened. We had a guy who threw 13 touchdowns last year with 5 interceptions. He just threw 60. Like, is it just Joe Brady? Was there other scheming that kind of went along? Did the entire offensive staff just say, okay, we're just going to throw the ball a whole lot more because we've got an extremely competent quarterback who completes the hell out of the ball? He just doesn't throw incompletions.
Yeah, the ball doesn't hit the ground. It's silly. But you look at, actually, the receivers on both sides are pretty good. But last night...
16 touchdowns, not 13.
Last night was just all about LSU. I mean, that game-clinching touchdown, if Terrence Marshall is 6'3", I don't know if he catches that ball. He's 6'4", goes up there and gets it like a crazy person. that, you know, they talk about 4 or 5 plays a game really being the difference. And there were 3 last night in particular where first you get to the final drive of the half by LSU where they're out of timeouts. And if Clemson could just stop Burrow short of, what do you make it, like a 23-yard scramble before the touchdown pass? I mean, at that point, they're not going to gamble. They're going to kick a field goal. Then they had him 3rd and 19, and there was that stupid pass interference call on a guy who just had no idea where the ball was. Okay, that led to 7. And then there was the 3rd and 11. Remember early in the second half, after Burrow took that lick near the end of the first half, he wasn't right. And Emsinger called that brilliant little bubble screen to Ja'Marr Chase on 3rd and 11, and he broke it big, made the first down. I mean, you talk about those 3 plays, that's at least double-digit points there, which meant all those empty possessions in the fourth quarter could have been the difference in the game. It wasn't. You know why? Because they have Burrow, and all he does is make freaking plays.
It would take him three seasons if he did what he did just his redshirt junior year at LSU to actually match what he did just yardage-wise last season. 3 years,
of course,
to hit the yards.
It's obscene.
I mean, his completion percentage jumped 20 points. 20 points. It got that much better.
They just implemented an entirely new scheme, and I would say it worked pretty well because they kicked everybody's rear end sideways.
He completed more passes this year than he attempted last year. That's just an offensive mindset of just like, okay, like, I don't think it's just Joe Brady, because if he's like an offensive analyst and, or, you know, assistant coach or whatever, I'm sure he has some input into how the offense is going to work, but it's still kind of the offensive coordinator who has to say,
calls the plays,
right? He still has to agree with Brady to say, hey, I like what you're doing here, I like these ideas, let's do that, and, you know, implement it all together and get everybody on the same page, because it can't just be Joe Brady having weekly meetings with Joe Burrow, and all of a sudden it's just like, everything worked out just great. We got us a Heisman.
They had before last night, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, and their running back, Edwards-Helaire, this isn't even real. They had 53 touchdowns between the 3 of them. Then you throw in Terrence Marshall. He had another 12. They had 4 different players score 100 points, including their kicker, Cade York. It was a crazy season. You know, it's funny because early on, they won at Texas, and it was a 7-point game. Then they had the Auburn game, which was tight, and Alabama, 5 points is a tad misleading because they were up double digits when Tagovailoa hit that 85-yard bomb with about a minute to go. And then after that, it was cancel Christmas. You know, they beat Ole Miss by 4 touchdowns. They beat Arkansas 56-20. They beat A&M 50-7. Kind of a slow start to the AFC title game, but they eventually ran past and laughed mockingly at Georgia 37-10. So, they had 63 points, 50, 56, 58, 66, 65, 55. That's a year. That's a year. I mean, if you average 30 points a game, that's not bad. That's 360 points over 12 games. So if you add up what they did, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 8 games over 60. That's 500 points in 8 games. Jeez. And by the way, I had Clemson. So you're talking about a real Le Scientist du Roquet. All right, 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Ryan. Ryan, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, Tanner, what's going on, man? Haven't called in a few months.
What's
you know,
up?
I'm a Florida guy. I've called before, although I wasn't rooting for the SEC last night because I hate LSU. but man, you know, you're talking about that Alabama game. The team that played LSU the toughest this year is Florida. Florida had the lead and the ball in the third quarter at LSU, and then the wheels came off. And so watch out for my boys moving forward. Dan Mullen's bringing us back.
Yeah, that wound up with a 14-point game. He gone. Yeah, Florida and LSU was and they played in Death Valley. It was 21-all at the half, and then Florida scored on a 75-yard march to go up by a TD, and they marched 75 yards, 52 yards, a big run, and then the one that put it away, Burrow to Chase from the other side of the field, one of those blitzkrieg drives, and it was 42-28, and that was all she wrote, and that's all she wrote. But by the numbers, yeah, Florida played right with them. 511 yards to 457. They both had first downs in the 20s. They both had some success running the ball. No turnovers. Neither team fumbled the ball. But by the way, look at Burrow's lethal efficiency in that game. He was 21 of 24 and averaged more than 12 yards per attempt. So, yeah, you don't think much of that right now, but, you know, both quarterbacks, Kyle Trask and Joe Burrow in that game with three touchdowns each. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, feel free to do so. The water's fine. Looking ahead this week, our triumvirate of fantastic pubs in our area, the Tap and Growler on 5th and Pearl, downtown Eugene. You've got the Public House Hub on A Street in Springfield. And Beer Garden invites you for the 5th annual Brews, Blues, and Chatter Festival. They'll have their 5 food carts out there, creating a unique variety of chatter. Blues music from some of the top talent in our area, and you get your passport, and you could be entered to win gift cards for Beer Garden and other excellent prizes, and big tap list, all featuring coastal breweries from Oregon, cider houses, tastings Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and starts 11 in the morning on Thursday and ends 10 at night on Sunday. The Blue Shimmy Band is going to start 7:30 with the music this coming Thursday. And as always, shows are all ages with no cover charge. The tasting schedule, Yahats Brewing, 6 to 8 Thursday, Pelican, 6 to 8 Friday, Arch Rock, 6 to 8 on Saturday. Get a little bit of a taste of the coast right here in Eugene. All right, break time has arrived. We'll do just that. We'll come back. We'll have an update and more crunch time. 95.3, The Score.
I've paid my dues time after time.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
Three down linemen for Clemson. They're showing five-man rush, and they do. Burrow throws to the end zone, far side, and it is caught by Terrace Marshall. With Darian Kendrick in coverage, it's an LSU touchdown. Having an 8-play, 57-yard drive that might just put it away for these LSU Tigers.
Yeah, that was the clincher. Hell of a throw, brilliant catch by Marshall. Time to get fitted for rings right there as we welcome you back to Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score. Other stories making the rounds that we maybe didn't get to yesterday because we were so duck-centric. Former Oregon safety and current Patriot Pat Chung. Everybody Pat Chung tonight. He had a charge of cocaine possession conditionally dismissed in New Hampshire. The conditions: he remains of a good behavior for 2 years, can't commit any crime, felony, or misdemeanor, or major motor vehicle offense. He submits to periodic drug testing. He performs 40 hours of community service, and he waives his right to a speedy trial and speedy indictment. So he had no prior criminal record. He was fully cooperative. By the way, this dates back to late June. And interesting, the cops got called to his house on a call to service, whatever the hell that means, and they obtained the evidence. And I guess that the amount of drugs, which were, I like the lawyers are the best, allegedly in his possession, were small. And he provided proof that he voluntarily underwent a full substance abuse evaluation. It determined not in need of treatment. And the indictment came down August 8th. And, I guess that's good news.
While you're yawning, I think what happened was he got a report that somebody had broken into his home.
Oh, right.
So the call to service was, "Hello, Mr. Police Officer. Please,
somebody may have broken into my home.
Yeah, please
and
do
stolen
the,
my Coke.
Please do the serving part of protect and serve and provide a service to my house of catching some bad guys probably before they find my drugs." And it just so happened while doing so, the police found all of his drugs.
So could you call the cops? Let's say you have a bunch of coke, a bunch of weed, and a bunch of alcohol.
Allegedly.
And, officer, my buddy Al brought this guy Jack over, and he's doing all our drugs and alcohol. Could you please come arrest him?
Mr. Police Officer, I have reason to believe that somebody is illegally using my illegal substances. Someone is illegally broken into my home and started using illegal substances that are not mine in any way. Please stop them, sir.
So,
Adam.
Or better yet, you show what a real head you are. Yo, officer dude, somebody's bogarting all my stuff. Could you, like, send somebody over here and get them the hell out? Somebody just tweeted, "Do you think the new offensive coordinator might bring more cowbell to the offense?" I assume he's talking about Joe Moorhead and the potential for the now former head coach of Mississippi State. Should we refer to him as the former Mississippi State head coach or former Penn State offensive coordinator? Because it went way better when he was an OC at PSU. All right, so last night they've been doing this 150 top players in the history of college football, and they like did the last 11. I don't know why they did 11, but that was the countdown. And I had to pause it so I could quickly jot down the names, even though they gave me the site where to go. I just wanted to get it over right there. So, Roger Staubach, Naval Academy. Gale Sayers, this is working from 11 up to 1. The Kansas Comet. Barry Sanders, Oklahoma State. Dick Butkus. Are you really laughing at Butkus? Confess.
The whole name is funny. If he just goes by Richard and his name is Richard Butkus, that's kind of a funny name. His name is Dick Butkus. That's hilarious. That's a funny name. You can't help but laugh at that. That is a man that was laughed at his entire life for his objectively funny-sounding name and became a Hall of Fame linebacker because of it. And he was so good at football because he was so mad at people laughing at the name Butkus, Dick Butkus, that he had the goat that he played too well, and they now have the Butkus Award that they give out to people. Von Miller won that award. He says, I listened to an interview he did one time. He said he laughs at it whenever he reads he won the Dick Butkus Award. It's funny.
It's funny. So, one thing, and I understand the difficulty in making this type of an overall evaluation, but I do know this. ESPN has a tendency to try and be, and this might sound weird, too all-encompassing. They like to play to the new people, they like to play to the old guard, and sometimes I don't know if they're trying to have a more diverse timeline than actually pick who they think are the best and most deserving players. So you got Staubach, like I said, Navy. Sayers went to Kansas. Sanders, Oklahoma State. Dick Butkus from Illinois. Earl Campbell from Texas. Red Grange, I believe, also from Illinois. Jim Thorpe from Carlisle Indian College.
What?
Yeah. He played in the teens. That's, you know, he played in the, maybe even earlier. He played in the 19-teens, I think, at the college level. The thing with him is, you got to remember, he also then he went and played baseball, and then he was in the NFL, and he coached for a while. So he was up there. Archie Griffin, Ohio State, the only two-time Heisman winner. Bo Jackson at three. Auburn, Herschel Walker, Uga. And Jim Brown, the greatest college football player ever from the Cuse. You know, I know, and I've said it a million times, the generations. Jim Brown did not do anything really spectacular at Syracuse. I mean, he played in a million years ago. Well, you obviously, Red Grange, the Galloping Ghost, and Jim Thorpe played way longer ago. But you look at Jim Brown, I mean, back then freshman didn't play, so as a sophomore, he had 75 catches. No, 75 rushes, sorry. 439 yards. Then he was up to, and remember, they only played eight games then, and they were never good. I do not believe Thorpe ever played in a postseason game. They were 4-4 his first year. Then in, and we're talking 1954, by the way. In 55, they went 5-3, did not play. And he was their leading rusher. They definitely didn't throw the ball very much. 60 total pass attempts. And they had 6 guys who had more than 100 yards rushing. But like I said, he only had 666. And then, okay, they did play in the Cotton Bowl in 1956 against the Texas Christian. They had a pretty good team, and they had the 11th best offense in the country by points scored, and he rushed for 986 yards. You know, 6.2 yards a carry, I get that, but I don't know, man. The greatest player ever in the history of the game with very... What's a step up from as you're going from like pedestrian to become royalty? It's like maybe two steps up from that. So interesting choice. And
well, the thing that got me was there's been what? I mean, in the 150 years that you've been playing
yeah, they
college football.
One guy a year. How generous.
Well, I mean, yeah, they could have done that. Whatever they were doing or whatever. But if you have 150 years worth of college football players to pull from, you're looking at a list of like millions of kids that have played high school or college football at this point, and, you know, been able to be trying to put on this list. Is being first or third or eighth or 11th that big of a deal?
No, it's a ridiculous honor to be the top 10.
Right, yeah. Like, okay, whatever. Like, you were up there, you weren't up there. I don't think, I didn't even know that there was a rest of a list that they were putting together.
Me either. That was kind of sneaky. They said it was coming up next, and I was like, All right.
I'd heard that the CFB 150 show that ESPN was doing was really good, and it was a great look into the inside of college football, but I didn't watch any of them because they were on while we were doing the show here, and it just, whatever. If you have a list, you have a list. There's been, you know, a million people, let's just say, to make it an even number, have played college football before, and if you're in the top 150, if you're in the top 50, the top 10, wow, you're really good at college football. Like, at that point, does it really matter if you're trying to split hairs here at just over an obscene thing?
Yeah, it just seemed like I know what kind of an NFL player he was. And, you know, he was a sixth overall pick in the draft. Of course, there was only like 12 teams then, so he's in the middle of the first round. But I'll tell you what, the one thing I will insist on, there's no way there were eight better players than Barry Sanders. I don't care if they went back to a time before our Earth started and, like, Earth Part 1 had college football for, like, 375 years. There's no way there are eight better players than Barry Sanders. And, you know, a lot of people, well, he had the one big year. Well, that's kind of how things work in college. You have that year and you become a high draft pick, become an NFL player, you rush for 2,700 yards and 37 touchdowns, and people are like, well, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And then Joe Burrow comes along and ruins everything. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Sanders, now remember, he played in a backfield in 87 with another football Hall of Famer named Thurman Thomas, who was actually the big gun, who had 1,600 yards, 17 touchdowns, averaged 6.4 yards a carry. By the way, quarterback on that team, I'm a man, I'm 40. Yeah, Mike Gundy was the quarterback for Thurman Thomas. By the way, those two guys in the backfield, you're like, I feel really good about handing off. I don't know about you guys. Coach, I appreciate you letting me throw the ball almost 300 times. We should have run it more. Hindsight. All right, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go. Bring in Ed. Ed, good afternoon. How's it going?
Yeah, I came in a little bit at the end of your conversation about Jim Brown being selected number one, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact not only was he great in his individual ones, but the fact that he was breaking that color barrier, and he was such an overall phenomenal athlete. And I think the way they chose those, they were looking at impact beyond just college football, but you know what they did, and Brown was pretty unique. It was after that when they finally got the first black Heisman, and he was I don't think he was given the same chances, which is part of the reason why he wasn't picked as high in the NFL. And you know, it just things, you know, and if you think about who's the greatest athlete in UCLA, they will always pick Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, well, he played like four sports, right?
And I think it's for the same similar reasons. He was great there, but he was also, it's what he represented the university. So I think if you talk to Syracuse people, they talk about Jim Brown with a level of reverence.
Sure.
That's, beyond.
But Ed,
and, you know, remember all those Floyd Little and, you know, Ernie Nevers, all those guys came after him. And he was just a pioneer.
No, I wanted to ask you, did they in fact say in putting together this list that they were being all incorporating, or was it just about numbers, statistics, and wins?
I read the articles beforehand, and when I looked at it, they did bring up his other impacts, but I do think the NFL, his impact on the NFL, and I think most people think he's probably one of the greatest players in the NFL ever.
So oh, absolutely think, the NFL, but like I
yeah.
said.
And I think they put those things together because college was bigger before NFL.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
no question. A college
so
was actually...
Back in those days, it was much bigger. I connect a lot with the Notre Dame community, and they're pretty upset that the highest Notre Dame player was number 29. I think it was on the list, which was Paul Hornung. And they can't believe that Johnny Lujack was 37. But I think your point, you know, it's hard. I mean, you know, when you look at what Joe Brady did last night, you know, I have a hard time understanding that he may not, he may be one of the greatest players ever, what he did for the whole season.
No.
That is one season.
No
and,
question.
And my daughter lives in Athens, Ohio. They've gone crazy since he won the Heisman, and the kids are all wearing purple and yellow in Ohio, and they're going to rename the stadium after him, the high school stadium. It's
right.
It's just been, it's, and Ohio football, you know, and I think Browns in Ohio football's really big, so.
Oh, no. I'm well aware of that. All right, hey, yeah, okay. good
well,
contribution, Ed. All right, have a good one. First Black Heisman winner, Ernie Davis, 1961. And what he said is very interesting because in the 1950s, and that's when my dad grew up, I mean, NFL football was behind certainly baseball, certainly college football, boxing, probably horse racing as well. Just as far as until the 1958 championship game, the legendary overtime at Yankee Stadium where Johnny Unitas and the Colts beat the Giants in overtime, that really kind of was the first step towards the NFL basically becoming the boss. All right, we're a tad tardy. We'll take a break. We'll be back. It's Tuesday, so we'll end crunch time with...
What are you doing?
Next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Rob Manfred went so far as to call this a player-driven scheme and yet did not discipline the players because he understands that the MLB Players Association would have fought against any suspension and tangled this up potentially for years. Instead, he went back to the memo he sent out September 15th, 2017, telling teams that if you have any technology-driven illicit activity, the general manager and the manager are going to be the ones held responsible. And he held firm to that edict.
Jeff Passan, ESPN. No players facing any discipline in the cheating scandal. Probably a topic for another day right now. Tuesday, we wrap crunch time with the big question. It's called, What Are You Doing? Let's let Nick lead off.
Well, it's actually a topic for right now. To baseball fans mad at Commissioner Rob Manfred, I ask.
What are you doing?
There was quite the divide on Twitter yesterday as to if what Manfred did was enough in punishing the Astros. And it's just all very strange to me. There was no precedence on using technology to steal signs. And there had never been a team that worked so hard at trying to steal signs like the Astros had. A manager and a GM were suspended for a season. The max $5 million fine was handed out. Then the GM and the manager were fired, and the odds that either of them work in baseball again are pretty damn low. What is there else to be mad about? That there wasn't a literal lifetime ban handed out? That Hinch wasn't personally fined X number of millions of dollars? Or that Manfred didn't strip the title away from Houston, since it seems like they're cheated their way to that title? I mean, in the last one, that one is just the weirdest argument. You really want a title as a Dodger or a Yankee fan that you saw played out on the field to be taken away and handed to you? You just want the empty space or an asterisk that the Dodgers have to give up their own super sad World Series parade 3 years later because they were runners up, or the Yankees that get it for finishing third or fourth, which is just, it's just weird. And sure, there was a legal use of stealing signs, and knowing what pitch might be thrown in baseball is pretty helpful, but you can't prove that Evan Gattis wouldn't have hit a homer off CeCe in Game 7 of the ALCS, or that on the road in Game 7 they wouldn't have jumped out to a 5-0 lead through two innings, and that wasn't just baseball talent. Considering two guys who helped build up a franchise that was ready for the future of baseball from nothing to now whatever they are, and have the pseudo-ban put upon them, it's a pretty fair punishment. And we still haven't gotten to whatever's coming to Alex Cora, who did this now with two different franchises, so let's all calm down with the take-the-title-away stuff, as I ask.
What are you doing?
I have a repeat performer.
Ah.
To Antonio Brown, I ask.
What are you doing?
Can't refer to him as an NFL receiver any longer. I don't think that's going to change. This guy needs some help. He's still spiraling. I said it earlier, having grown up around it. It just reeks of bipolar. The highs are too high. The lows are too low. So he had a run-in with the police at his home in Hollywood, Florida. And for some reason, he live-streamed the video. A confrontation with his girlfriend, Chelsea Chris, who's the mother of their three kids. And the kids were there in the middle. He's screaming and cursing, calling the cops the N-word. He grabs a bag of gummy candies. Let's say they're phallically shaped. Throws them at her with a pretty vile suggestion. And remember, this is a guy twice accused of serious sexual misconduct. He's lost and maybe dangerous, as we ask.
What are you doing?
Man, he needs a lot of help. Oof. On a lighter note, to the cop that threatened to arrest LSU players smoking cigars last night, I ask.
What are you doing?
Michael Casagrande of AL.com was covering last night's national championship game and said that as he walked into a smoke-filled LSU locker room with players lighting up their celebratory victory cigars, a cop walked into the room and unironically announced, "Everyone smoking cigars is subject to arrest." Dude, when was the last time you had fun? Was it ever? Were you as a small child practicing being a police officer, literally policing the amount of fun that other kids were having on the playground? You must be so much fun to have at parties. This is your go-to move, really. You can't let these kids enjoy their big moment, maybe the only big moment of their lives, with their friends, teammates, coaches, families, whatever, with a cigar? This is really what you have to do, is enforce the no smoking indoors law in Louisiana. Were you actually prepared to be the guy who was going to call in and say that there's 35 to 40 people smoking cigars at the Superdome, bringing a couple paddy wagons, all in for booking, or I'm going to work on all of the paperwork on arresting and fining and citing these people? Why not also go after the guy who lit fireworks off indoors, or the people that fired confetti cannons and give them tickets for littering? Lighten up, as I ask.
What are you doing?
To the USC Athletic Department, I ask.
What are you doing?
So while the Reggie Bush O.J. Mayo scandal dates to the mid-2000s, there was no punishment until 2010. Today, three senior officials were fired. CFO Steve Lopes, Athletic Fund Senior Director Ron Orr, Associate Athletic Director Scott Jacobson. And according to the L.A. Times, their role in past scandals, including the big national story we now know as the Varsity Blues scandal involving actresses Felicity Huffman and Aunt Becky from Full House, Lori Loughlin, 34 parents in all involved in this conspiracy to, in essence, commit fraud and bribery to get their idiot kids into various universities. Many around the SC program are hailing the move and playing the about time card. This is a mess, and there are some more heads to roll, and maybe even some further litigation, as we ask.
What are you doing?
Last one very quickly for me, to Brad Marchand, I ask.
What are you doing?
I'm talking again about the Boston Bruins in the shootout. This time, Brad Marchand takes the cake for the worst, if not the worst, shootout attempt in the history of the NHL. He forgot the puck, and you don't need a high hockey IQ to know that you need the puck with you if you're going to start your shootout attempt. It's kind of important. Brad Marchand forgot about this. He's played in 728 NHL games. He's scored penalty shots and shootout goals in his career. He should know what he's doing, but he skated up there to center ice with the puck sitting perfectly still, and he just swiped right over and forgot about it. I have no idea how, as I ask.
What are you doing?
All righty. Do I need to do my third one, or should we break out of here?
Probably break. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll be back. Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
Huzzah!